Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
Hey Sam, and I'm Press.
Pras, it was a big week in FPL this week, with many managers expecting very big things from their teams, especially those that own João Pedro and Cole Palmer, who were the most transferred in ahead of Chelsea's match against Burnley. But for Palmer's owners, it ended very much in disappointment. Game week 28 was also the week that we passed 1,000 defensive contribution returns for the season, meaning that over 2,000 defensive contribution points have now been awarded in the game. But it was really low scoring. How was your week, Pras?
It was one of those weeks where I felt like I got away because I didn't have the aforementioned João Pedro and Palmer. So going into the Burnley game, I was a little bit nervous with just Enzo. They disappointed and ultimately I got 47 points, which was just enough for a green arrow and pretty much carried by Virgil van Dijk. And we'll talk about him in a second. But to honor the defensive contributions, I got none from my defenders. So here's that.
Do you know what? Your game week sounds very similar to mine because I was in the same spot. I didn't have João Pedro. I didn't have Cole Palmer. And I was terrified about that Chelsea game. I just had Enzo Fernandez, who I really wanted to sell, but you can't sell ahead of a game at home to Burnley. So I thought, well, yet one more week. But I bought in Virgil van Dijk this week and he did save my game week in the same way that it sounds like he did yours. I also managed to bench Senesi, so that was fun for his clean sheet because I just didn't see that coming, to be honest. Yeah. 42 for me, it's a very, very small red, but the first red I've had in weeks now. So I was on a bit of a hot streak and it's a bit annoying to see that little red one appear in that long list of greens. But alas, I still feel like it should have been a lot better. The team on paper should have done a hell of a lot better than it did do. But there we are. And it has been a bit of a difficult season for me, and I think for you as well, which is why I'm actually really looking forward to the launch of the Adobe Express Badge League for Game Week 28. All managers who have created a team badge, either in the Premier League app or on the website, will automatically be entered into a new league with some fantastic prizes to be won. The scoring starts from zero in Game Week 28. Yay. Hurrah! So it will be a great way to track our progress over the run-in and the remainder of the season. But that does mean, Praz, if I'm going to win the Adobe Express Badge League, I need to start getting my team right. And so game week 28 feels like it's going to be really important. So let's reflect on game week 27 and make sure that we get our team set up in the best way possible for this run-in. Should we start with Chelsea then, given that we both only had Enzo Fernandez and their assets were incredibly popular heading into this week?
Yes, let's do
that.
Were you
worried like I was when João Pedro gets that goal in the fourth minute and thinking, oh my goodness, this is going to end in tears for us non-owners? And the owners probably thinking the complete opposite. This is going to be an absolute haul.
It's the timing of it, right? I mean, the game week's just started and 3 minutes in, you're like, here we go. João Pedro, probably assisted by Palmer. It wasn't, of course, but those two have been combining really well, whether it's for penalties or other open play goals. And it was like, yes, Enzo's just watching from the sidelines. So I was exactly in your position where in the end, I was very relieved that João Pedro only got the goal, only one bonus point. And essentially, Palmer was unlucky because he had that one-on-one, which Walker almost gifted to him, which he didn't take advantage of. And now they go into playing Arsenal in an away game, which is not that easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was one of those where I was looking at the fixture last week thinking, probably should get João Pedro or Cole Palmer, but it feels like it's too late because then I look at the fixtures that they have both for the weekend and also in the midweek round coming up, and neither of them are particularly great games. And you know, I think most managers, if you have them and you're planning to try and play through in game week 31, then you might be in a position where you're thinking, well, I'm going to hold my Chelsea assets. But they're certainly not one of those teams that would be looking to target. Interestingly, they've now dropped 17 points from winning positions at home in the Premier League this season. That's more than any other side. And to be honest, they were a little bit lucky right at the end of this game to come away with the 1 point that they did because it could very easily have gone differently. I guess the other thing that we need to talk about is the Chelsea defence, because they have been really popular. The likes of Chalobah and, of course, Robert Sanchez in goal have been really heavily owned by FPL managers over the last few weeks. And when those clean sheets stick, it really hurts for those managers that don't have them. But actually, they haven't been sticking. We've been seeing this odd goal conceded here or there. It's not been brilliant for Chelsea defensively. So do they also look like a quite a hard sell now heading into the next couple of fixtures?
I think in general, yes, you can start to come off your Chelsea picks. Now, it's all of these things are very team dependent on what else do you have as a problem in your team. But when I look at Chelsea defense, I mean, to play Burnley, Leeds, Wolves and West Ham in your last four games and not have a single clean sheet, that's, I mean, you can say unlucky slash it's just, you know, it's just not ideal at all. And their numbers have not been that great. Now, in terms of XG conceded, they have all been around one. So it's not like they have come away saying, you know, they should have kept those clean sheets. We were saying this about Van Dijk, by the way, 3-4 weeks ago, where he was a little bit unlucky to concede, but it wasn't the case for Chelsea. And a big reason for this is set pieces. They obviously conceded that that corner in the end. They're now the bottom team in the Premier League for XG conceded from set plays, which is a remarkable stat, which is 14 goals conceded or 14 XG conceded from set plays. And it's not ideal when you're playing Arsenal as your next game.
Bodes well for Gabriel, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Which was what
Gabriel,
I was thinking.
Gabriel, Rice, pick your players.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll talk about Arsenal a little bit later, but Rice is on my he is on my sell list over the next few weeks because obviously there's the blank coming up. But those XG numbers from set pieces for Chelsea was making me kind of go, oh, maybe I should just give Declan Rice one more week because, blimey, they are really struggling from set pieces. And who's the one team you don't want to come up against when you're struggling defending set pieces? Well, of course, it's Arsenal. Before we move on, I think we just give a little shout out to Fleming, who was playing 90 minutes for the first time since game week 13 in this one, scored his sixth goal of the season, picked up 3 bonus points. And look, you know, I'm not for a minute suggesting that you invest in any Burnley assets, but he is ticking over nicely. And so if you are looking for a kind of cheap forward in the game, you could do a lot worse, I think, than having somebody like him if you're reshuffling the budgets around. But I don't think there's anyone else at Burnley. I mean, obviously, if you've got Dubravka, you hold as a second goalkeeper, he's great. But otherwise, no real interest in Burnley assets right now, I don't think.
Not really. But it's been a tough season for forwards, right? So whenever there's any gems emerging in the forward slot, we're all very interested because we want to spend as little as possible for players who get goals. And yeah, Fleming looks like a good option. We've talked about others in the past on this podcast, like DCL, who are showing potential. But yes, it's been a tough season for forwards in FPL.
Okay, well, let's go from one end of the forward spectrum to the other and Erling Haaland and Manchester City. I tried to be brave in this game week, Praz, and move the armband away from Haaland and put it on Semenyo because I did think that Manchester City would try and use this as an opportunity to get a march on Arsenal. They were playing ahead of them. Newcastle had been away in Azerbaijan over the midweek playing in the Champions League. And though they did incredibly well, I did think that the travel might have an impact on the way that Newcastle would play. It was a home fixture. I didn't get an attacking return out of Semenyo. But I did get defensive contribution points. Now, that was the second time in a home match this season he's got them against Newcastle because, of course, he picked them up for Bournemouth earlier on in the season. I did feel a little bit aggrieved, though, because Antoine Semenyo really should have got more points from this game. There were a number of moments where Marmoush is in on goal and all he's got to do is play Semenyo in. And I was screaming at my TV, Marmoush, pass it to Semenyo. And he didn't. He took the shot himself. It is a bit annoying when Marmoush plays, both for Haaland and for Semenyo, because Marmoush is that greedy striker that actually we often love owning in FPL because they take the opportunities themselves. But when you've got the other players playing alongside him, blimey, it was a bit of a frustrating watch this one.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. As soon as I saw the team lineup, it was a little bit of a different shape than the more usual 4-2-2-2 that Pep's been putting out. And so Marmoush did make that big difference both for Semenyo and Haaland. And it ultimately also affects the minutes, right? Because in some games, and I don't know, not speculating, but you know, for Haaland, for Semenyo, are they going to be playing consistent 90 minutes when Marmoush is getting more minutes around? Foden's going to get some minutes at some point. He wants that spot in the England team as well. You know, you've got Cherki as well, who did so well in the middle part of the season, but now doesn't seem to be starting again. So that competition in that attack is just very difficult to predict. But for the moment, I think Semenyo is a great pick. And again, to celebrate 1,000 DEFCON points, you got a captain return as your DEFCON. So that's never a bad thing, getting 4 points as a return. But I think in general, Newcastle did put up a good display here.
Yeah. And I think for Haaland, I thought I was getting away with it a little bit because he was just getting the 1 point more for a while. And then there was a bonus point that gets added. So eventually it became 2 points. And actually that was the difference between a green and a red arrow for me. Had I captained Haaland, it would have been a green arrow. With the Semenyo captain, those 4 points lost effectively. Then that's what caused the red. Let's talk about Haaland for a second before we get to Nico O'Reilly. I think he deserves a whole chat by himself. But let's start with Haaland. Just one open play goal now in 10. But in this one, he did have 4 shots. His creativity is definitely growing. The assist potential is coming from him. Maybe because he's not that kind of target. I mean, he still is the target man up top, but he's not quite playing in that position with the new players that he has around him. You've got a little bit more ability for him to be creative for them. I think I saw more from Haaland in this one than I have for a few weeks, though, in terms of the potential returns. And with the fixtures coming the way that they are for Manchester City over the next few weeks before their potential blank game week in game week 31, he feels like an important own. And for those managers that have sold, I think I'd be really wary of what to do now without Haaland in my team.
I think there's two things to it, right? I mean, has there been a drop-off in the last 6 weeks? Yes. But can he still go big in the next three because of the things you mentioned? The signs were coming back against Newcastle. Also, yes. Then you also have to put into context, let's say you sold Haaland. Who'd you go for? Let's say last week you did Palmer because you wanted that captaincy. Now Palmer has difficult fixtures. You went for Salah. Well, we'll talk about Liverpool and how peripheral Salah was in that game. So it's really about, do you actually need that money to sell Haaland? Because Haaland can still do well. He can still be a captaincy option. You don't have to captain him like you didn't last week. So I think there's a little bit of a strategic discussion to be had with Haaland. The fact that there's a possibility of him blanking in 3 game weeks from now, it's not guaranteed, but it's a possibility. That also plays into people's minds. So if you've sold him, I think it's fine. It's what you do with that money that counts. But if you have him, yes, I agree with you completely that I would keep the faith. He does have good fixtures coming up. Of course, the next week is Leeds away, which is not ideal. But he could still do well. Man City are still expected to do well. There's a context of the whole league at play here where it's getting close and he's going to score. So that's where I am with Haaland. I think Pep also praising him at the end of the game was also a little bit of a carrot that, you know, don't worry, Haaland, I still love you. And, you know, I think Pep said he was his man of the match. So I think the signs are there. And don't be surprised if he gets that brace or hat trick in the next 3 or 4 games.
Okay. Here comes the Nico O'Reilly Appreciation Society. He has been sold by over 1 million managers since game week 20. This was his best ever FPL haul. He had 2 goals and, of course, all 3 bonus points as a result. As a Mark Gahey owner, I was so frustrated by this one because the position of Nico O'Reilly, the role he is now being asked to play in that Manchester City team. I mean, he was up ahead of Haaland at points during this game, playing in a more advanced role. I can't see anything but goals for him coming over the next few weeks. If he continues to play him in this advanced position, then he's basically a gift, isn't he? Because he's cheaper than all of the other Manchester City defenders that you might want to own. He is attacking at will. Manchester City's defensive numbers are looking better in recent weeks as well. And of course, because he's playing out of position, if they do keep that clean sheet, you would benefit from the full 4 clean sheet points. And because of that, he is more likely to pick up the bonus points as well. So this, it feels like a whole, everything's kind of coming together with the exception of this unknown game week 31 that's kind of playing out in the background. Because my plan is, as people will have heard, I'm sure, on the official problem we've been talking over the last few weeks, has always been to continue to hold my Manchester City assets. Because if they do blank, there's going to then be a double game week. But Nico O'Reilly is putting his hand up and going, I think you could sell Mark Gahey ahead of the blank game week because you can just bring me back in after the blank. I wish I could bring him in right now, though, because I do think over the next 3 weeks, we could see some massive returns from O'Reilly.
I have to start with a rant. I owned him for about 10 weeks. Of those, the ones that stick out in memory was a 59th minute sub when they kept a clean sheet. Him coming on the 89th minute and getting a -1 point and blocking a clean sheet for me. And then just generally losing a clean sheet. I think he lost one on the 95th minute for me as well. So now that that is out of the way, yes, I think he's incredible. I think if you're playing in that 8 position, and it's not just 8, it's actually the box crashing 8, which is the guy who does join the attack pretty much every single time, makes you an incredible pick. So if your belief is that his minutes continue to remain how they are, and there's no reason not to because of his form, but I will add a little bit of a but here, which is that the midweek games are back, right? Now, Man City had a midweek off just before this. They have a midweek off again after the Newcastle game because they were not in the qualification rounds in the Champions League. However, from this weekend, they go again weekend, midweek, now for the foreseeable future. So when that happens, we've been here before for the last multiple years with Pep, that you just never know. I mean, no. 10 weeks ago, we were talking about Foden being the 90 minutes man playing every single game. Where is he now? We were talking about Cherki 6 weeks ago as the guy who's getting a lot of attacking returns, being involved in the attack. Where is he now? So that's my only caveat, that you just never know when Reinders starts to get a couple of games and then you start to panic, or is Nico Reilly going to start this game week or not? In isolation though, I think he's a fantastic pick. These are the unicorn picks we love in FPL, who can get you clean sheet points, can get you goals, not just assists. And yeah, I think it's perfect. If you have him, very jealous. If you don't, you can think about getting him, but there are other defenders you can also get.
Mm. Let's talk about Newcastle for a second, because we also had a defender scoring in this one for them with his first goal of the season for Lewis Hall. I don't think Newcastle are a team that I'm really seriously considering investing in at the moment. I think that the way that the fixtures are for other teams, they look better than the Newcastle ones. I mean, it's Everton up next at the weekend before Manchester United, who are in great form at the moment. And then it's Chelsea before the derby against Sunderland, the second derby of the season. Now, they'll want some revenge, I'm sure, for what happened last time. But nonetheless, those next four don't look brilliant from a Newcastle perspective. And despite the fact that you would expect them comfortably to go through in the Champions League, they still have another match to play out against Azerbaijan. Now, I would expect that Eddie Howe will rotate that squad quite heavily for that one, given the advantage that they have going into the game. But nonetheless, there's still another fixture this week and then the weekend and then the midweek round, as you say. Is there any interest in any Newcastle assets at the minute? Because for me, since Guimaraes' injury, I've lost kind of interest in investing in Newcastle from an FPL point of view.
Yeah, nothing imminent, but I do think for people maybe like myself who are looking to wildcard in Game Week 32, their home game against Sunderland in Game Week 31 presents a good opportunity to what we call dead end, which is just get that player for that 1 week and then wildcard them out. So I think that would be the only way where I can see myself owning a Newcastle player in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Later on, we'll see what doubles and blanks picture looks like. But yeah, I think Lewis Hall, Gordon keeps coming back in the picture because he scored those 4 goals incredibly in the midweek in the Champions League, like he always does in the Champions League, not in the Premier League. And I think those are the two that stick out. I think the other interesting play with them is just watch Walter Mardis' position. He's playing a lot more in the midfield, which allows, in this game, Elanga and Gordon to almost be the auxiliary strikers. Something to monitor in terms of their shape. And if that continues, Gordon becomes even better, but his minutes are never that great. So I think those are the two takeaways for me.
All right, it's time to talk about Spurs. As much as I would love to not talk about this game, I think we mostly have to focus in on it from an Arsenal perspective, of course, because they are one of the teams that we were heavily invested in. And over the last couple of weeks, with the double that they had last time around, we were kind of like, right, we have to be heavily invested. And then the whole conversation going into game week 27 was, what do you do with these Arsenal assets? Do you keep them? Do you sell them? Because, of course, the blank is coming for them, guaranteed blank in 31. Obviously, I was at the Spurs Stadium on Sunday afternoon watching this one, and it was an interesting game to watch from I was going to say from a kind of neutral perspective, but clearly I was not neutral in the North London Derby, anything but. But I was very impressed by some of what was going on for Arsenal, and particularly Gyökeres' performance in this one. Very, very impressive. His movement on the pitch, the way that he kind of dealt with getting in behind that Spurs defence, which is vulnerable at the best of times, but he exploited that really well. A couple of goals in this one. He was quite a popular sell this week because he didn't perform in that double game week that we had. It's quite interesting to know what to do with your Arsenal assets now, isn't it? Because last week I thought about it. I did sell Timber this time around, but replaced him with Virgil. So I'll take the loss of the assist, particularly given that he was subbed on 56 minutes and so actually only picked up 3. But it's interesting with Arsenal because we talked about Chelsea earlier and their vulnerability. And I do think that the way that this Arsenal team played against Spurs at the weekend and the momentum that they will now take from this game could mean that these Arsenal assets actually are really good holds for the game against Chelsea.
Yes, I do agree with you. And it'll be a first midweek off for Arsenal after a very long time, because obviously the previous midweek they played the double second of the double game week 26. So I think it's come at a nice time, this comprehensive win. And yeah, Arsenal put in a great performance. I think they were a little bit vulnerable at the back, but I don't want to call that vulnerability. It was more that it was mistakes. But if you look at open play in general, I think they controlled the game really well. I think the fact that Spurs went out with the three at the back helped Gyökeres in a way, yeah, because he could pick, sort of, he was more stationed closer to Danzo, who's the weaker of the central defenders, than the Van de Ven. And Saka and Martinelli stretched out the pitch really well. So I think it worked out in their favor almost. But, you know, Spurs are also still learning with their new manager in terms of how they shape up and how they transition in these tougher games. We'll judge Spurs after they play the easier fixtures or relatively easier fixtures. But just finishing on Arsenal, I do think they're an easy hold. Of course, nobody has to be held if there's a confirmed blank game week coming up. There are other opportunities. But I think if you have any of Rice, any of their defenders, I think this week you can definitely hold off because they will be right up for that Chelsea game.
Yeah, for sure. From a Spurs perspective, I think you're right. I mean, I think a lot's been said about Spurs' injury crisis, and the defence was very much makeshift at the weekend. Obviously, Van de Ven was there, captain in the side, Romero still suspended, Dragosan played. And actually, I thought did okay, but was definitely the one that they were targeting because he isn't as quick as Van de Ven at getting back. We will have a number of first-teamers back, hopefully, for the game on Sunday against Fulham. Expecting to see the likes of Porro back in the mix, which will help in terms of how Tudor wants to set this team up. Little shout out to Kola Muani up top. He started the game, I think, mostly because Solanke had a sore throat that was reported earlier on in the week. Otherwise, I think Solanke probably starts that game. But Kola Muani has worked with Tudor before at Juventus, did incredibly well there. Scores the goal, has another one which in my mind was quite harshly ruled out.
I was waiting for that one.
I was like, oh, really? I mean, yes, he has two hands on him. And by the letter of the law, yes, it gets ruled out. Okay, fine. But he did barely touch him. It's not like he shoved him over. He put his hands on him. He fell over, which is, you know, you're going to do that, I guess. But it's very difficult, I think, to know who's going to start up top for Spurs. And I think with the fixtures that Spurs have, yes, there's some better ones coming. And over the coming weeks, there's definitely some defences that Spurs could get at. But who starts in that forward position? We saw Richarlison come back. Solanke came on for half an hour. Kola Muani's there and around. Hopefully at some point in the next month or so, we're going to see the return of Mohamed Kudus, which will make a massive difference. As Spurs start to get players back, maybe those are the moments then where we want to start investing. But right now, steer clear and hold your Arsenal assets, I think is what we learned from this one.
Yep, absolutely.
Enough, Praz. Enough. Let's not talk about Spurs anymore. Hopefully I'll have nicer things to say about them after the weekend. But let's move to Liverpool, because this is a team that I do think that we want to be looking to target in on. We both have Virgil. Delighted to see that haul come in. Did you bring him in this week or did you also have him for the haul last week?
I haven't had him since game week 11.
You deserve these 2 weeks then. You deserve the 2 weeks of holes.
Every single week, he was, whether it's home to Burnley, it was home to Wolves, he kept conceding one goal, missing out on defensive contribution points by 2 or 3 points. This is where, I mean, you can call it patience or stupidity, where if you hold on to players long enough, they start to become good. And I do think that the goal was a little bit lucky in the sense of, you know, I mean, can we call it lucky? I suppose so. It came in the last minute. But the clean sheet certainly was lucky because Forest had
charmed
a lot
life.
Of chances.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we take it.
We definitely do. I mean, I've owned him for a little bit earlier on in the season. I bought him back for this week in replacement for Timber. So I was thrilled about this because I thought, you know, this is a really good opportunity. I was obviously at the Spurs Stadium, so I didn't watch this game until later when I got back. And I got home and obviously Lee's a massive Liverpool fan and he was like, I don't know how we've clean sheeted in that game. I don't know how. He called it a heist. That was his descriptive word for this game. He said, we've basically gone and robbed Nottingham Forest of 3 points and run away with them because if anything, they deserve to win the game. So I feel like I was maybe a little bit lucky with the Virgil pick, but you know, I picked him because the fixtures for Liverpool moving forward are fantastic. I appreciate what you've just said about the DEFCON not coming in over a few weeks, but he always has the scope in him to pick up those defensive contribution points. And we've seen the aerial threat that he offers from set pieces and then alongside the potential for just being involved in attacking return. So Virgil feels like a really good pick over the next few weeks and far better than any of the other Liverpool defenders to own. The transfer that I very nearly made heading into this one was to bring in Florian Wirtz. I really wanted him. I've been waxing lyrical about him for a couple of weeks now about how much I like him. Ever since I sold him to bring in Bruno Fernandes back in game week, or I can't even remember when it was now, like 3 or 4 game weeks ago, when the Manchester United fixtures swung. And I've wanted a route back to Wirtz ever since. And my route back to Wirtz has always been from Enzo or Rice. And obviously I couldn't sell Enzo because it was Burnley, and despite wanting to, and Rice, I just kind of felt like I looked at the XGC numbers from Spurs from set pieces and thought, don't think I can get rid of Rice. There's going no into rush. This one. I think I've got to hold him. So maybe I'll just give one more week to those two and bring in Wirtz afterwards. In the end, that was lucky for me because obviously he pulls out of the warm-up with a back injury. We don't really know what that looks like yet. Slot seemed to suggest that it probably wasn't too bad. But the trouble with a back injury is you just don't really know until you start looking at it a little bit further. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see. No midweek action for Liverpool this week. So it will be waiting right through till Friday's press conference to find out what's going on with Wirtz. Is it possible to go for Dom Szoboszlai instead? Because we do know that whatever come what may, Dom Szoboszlai is going to start. The problem we have with him is he going to start a right back? Is he going to start in the centre of midfield, which is where we want him? I don't want him starting at right back. And I don't think the Liverpool fans do either, really, because he's so important. When he moved into the midfield, Liverpool looked a lot better.
Yeah,
he is on set pieces as well, so there's another route to points. If Wirtz isn't available, I could see myself going from Enzo to Szoboszlai instead.
Yep. So here's my perspective on this. In terms of Wirtz, him not being there just affects everybody. Like they were lost, especially in that first half, on what to do with the ball, including with Salah, by the way. Because we don't see the same Liverpool where just get the ball to Salah, he's going to take on his defender and then cross and create a chance or shoot. It's just not the way Liverpool are operating at the moment. They go a lot of, you know, they go centrally. Gakpo hasn't been as effective. So without Wirtz, it was just not working. And I, as an Ekitike owner, who we can also talk about, was just watching this and going, why do I own Ekitike if Wirtz is not playing? So even though I will not own Wirtz, I'm wishing that Wirtz is back. But to complete the Wirtz discussion, even if, let's say, Slot says that he's better, Liverpool play on a Saturday, and then they play on a Tuesday because, as we said, game week 29 is a midweek deadline. So does he start both? Does he get 90 minutes in both? It just puts into question the whole thing. Then coming to Szoboszlai, I think we know that Frimpong could be back. Gomez could be back. And the fact that, you know, they reverted to the mean. So first 30 minutes, Szoboszlai started at right back. Then Jones came into right back. Or they were interchanging a lot more and Szoboszlai was getting into the central spaces. So I think Szoboszlai is a good pick if Wirtz is out. If he's in, then he's still an okay pick. So I'm not saying he's a bad pick regardless, but I think he would be much better if it would be Wirtz who's out and Frimpong is fit. That's what I feel for Liverpool in general. But I think with the fixtures that they have, home to West Ham, away to Wolves, I think those two are just good to target regardless of who you get.
Yeah, it feels like Liverpool are an invest. And I thought that Nottingham Forest were going to be a de-invest, to be honest. When I saw the new manager appointment, I was thinking, well, the key asset at Nottingham Forest so far this season has been Elliot Anderson. He's been this defensive contribution monster, constantly racking up the points, but got them again in this one, by the way, the 11th consecutive match in a row that he's done that. 381 defensive contributions this season he has got. No other player comes anywhere close. And I wondered whether with the new manager in charge, we might see a more attacking Nottingham Forest side again, a bit more like we saw under Ange Postecoglou. And maybe that might have a negative impact on Elliot Anderson. In fact, it didn't. In fact, I'd say it was quite the opposite, actually. We saw the still defensive securities of Elliot Anderson still picking up the defensive contribution points, but also joining in the attack. So I think if you've got Elliot Anderson, he absolutely remains a hold now, because of all of the teams that you have in the league, the ones that have got something to really fight for, they're the ones that you want to be investing in. Like, you want to be investing in Manchester City and Arsenal and the title charge. You want to be investing in the Manchester Uniteds, the Liverpools, the Aston Villas, the Chelseas, the ones that are competing for those Champions League spots. And at the bottom, the teams that are fighting to survive, I feel like there's some good opportunities there. And Elliot Anderson now feels like a continued hold. And maybe if you want to change up the way that your investment looks in your team and you want to go for a cheaper fifth so that you can have three up top, maybe Elliot Anderson is exactly what we need.
I don't disagree. I think he's been very consistent, getting a 4-point floor every single game, and then anything else you get, whether that's bonus or an assist, just comes on top, is amazing for any player. The only thing I would say is he was subbed off for the first time this season, which for people who fixate on expected minutes a lot, was a little bit of a yellow flag. I want to see it another couple of games and see, is he getting subbed off earlier? Because you know what happens when you get subbed off before 80 minutes? Your potential for defensive contribution comes down massively, because there's so many of these defensive contributions are made in the final 10 minutes. It didn't happen in this game. He got his defensive contributions and then was subbed off. It won't happen every single game. So that's something to monitor, I feel. But otherwise, I think, you know, he is competing now with some other very good mid-priced midfielders, which you will talk about in the main pod, I'm sure. Dango Ouattara, you're talking about Tavernier or even Ryan. So there are players that you can get some upside with goals that can compete with this floor that Elliot Anderson brings with the defensive contributions.
Well, let's move on to another couple of teams then that are have those options in Rayan at Bournemouth, and also are kind of competing with Forest for staying in the Premier League next season in West Ham. I did not expect this game to play out as a 0-0 draw. I benched Senesi this week because West Ham have been playing incredibly well and Bournemouth have been chaos. Brilliant games to watch, high scoring games, but no real defensive security. Not this time around. So the goalkeepers both covering themselves in glory in this one. Petrovic with a clean sheet, 2 bonus points, 3 saves. He's made 83 saves now this season, which only Dubravka can batter. And then at the other end of the pitch, we've got Hermansson, who has taken over as the West Ham number one, it seems, in the last couple of weeks. Second double-digit haul since he's now starting for them in game week 25. A clean sheet, 5 saves and 3 bonus points. So it was all about the goalkeepers in this one. They're not particularly heavily owned, although I know a certain Frenchman on the official pod who did play the Bournemouth goalkeeper this week, so he'll be waxing lyrical about him on Thursday, I'm sure. But it was defensively, particularly from a West Ham perspective, they were very, very good in this game. And I think West Ham will consider themselves incredibly unlucky that they didn't knock out that Bournemouth clean sheet.
They were so close, and conceding almost 3 expected goals is just, you know, if you started a Bournemouth defender, I'm not jealous, because I benched Hill, you benched Senesi. it was lucky. Right? I mean, West Ham should have scored. Petrovic kept them in the game multiple times. And it does actually bode well for West Ham in general that their performances have taken a massive uptick. But staying with Bournemouth for a second, I think their performance was typical of what they've shown us, which is defensively very poor away from home, but very good at home. And so it's a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde situation going on at Bournemouth, where you just play your Bournemouth defenders at home. You don't have to play them away from home. Obviously, they get kept a lucky clean sheet in this one. But in general, their attack still looks decent. They did create chances. Yes, West Ham were disciplined, but they did create chances. And the big one was for me that Tavernier also came back from an injury and looked fantastic in the final 20-30 minutes that he got. And that attack just clicks a lot better when Tavernier's in it, with the added flair that the wingers bring in, Adli and Ryan, who we talked about. So I think their attack looks good as well if you wanted to invest there.
It's also really interesting though, isn't it? Because with Tavernier coming back, you kind of have that, well, who's going to be the player that misses out in order for him to start the games? And as a As somebody who's looking to change up the way that my midfield looks in the coming weeks, Rayan has been a player that I've been really scouting quite heavily. I also have Krupe Jr. as my third forward, and I benched him this week thinking, but I was really on the fence about that, because I kept saying, if I see the starting 11 and he's in it, I'm going to really regret this decision, because the way that Bournemouth are scoring goals and creating chances, I do think that there is a good opportunity for him to really excel in this one.
And he played 90 minutes.
So when Tavernier came on, he didn't come on for Rayan or for Krupe Jr. He came on for Evan Nilsson. So there is a slight concern now going into the next few weeks as to where and how Bournemouth set up, because they do have a lot of really decent options in that forward line. Now, I think Rayan has done enough over the last few weeks to get the starts, but maybe there's the odd one here or there that he doesn't. Maybe there's some rotation around with Krupe Jr. and Evan Nilsson, because I'd expect Tavernier to come back in and start. So I am probably now just going to wait a week on Bournemouth's midfield, see how they play out in the weekend's actions, and then try and make a decision before game week 29. But given it's a midweek round, again, maybe we see a little bit more rotation because those two games come thick and fast.
I mean, I think you summarized it really well. It's difficult to go for any one of them at the moment. If you have them, hold them, be optimistic, but you can't be sure on their minutes because Iraola loves Ivan Nilsson. And so if he gets 60 odd minutes, then, and he loves Tavernier, so who does the minutes come out from? So I think you're right to say that you can wait. And if you have to make a decision this week, I think it's okay to be a little bit skeptical on the minutes and have high error bars and just go, you know what, I don't have to be the first one there.
Yeah, a little word on West Ham, because the next three or four fixtures really are such a shame, because otherwise I would definitely be buying a West Ham attacking asset, probably Somerville, to be honest, because I've been loving the way that he's been playing. But Liverpool up next before Fulham in midweek, Manchester City, and then Aston Villa. Those next four games are really difficult for West Ham. Jarrod Bowen proving to be the defensive monster of the forward line, picking up defensive contribution points again. He now has 8 for the season, which is more than anyone else in those attacking in the forward positions. It's difficult though, isn't it, with West Ham given those fixtures? I think if you have a West Ham asset, if you have Somerville or Bowen or anyone like that in your team, then you hold them probably because they do have momentum. They have fight. They've got something to be playing for, which is important. But I don't think you're going to invest given the four fixtures that they have in the coming weeks.
Agreed. Nothing else to add. I think if you have them, keep them. Otherwise, no need to invest.
Let's move on to your team then, because this is a team that I very, very nearly captained Bruno this week, Praz. I so nearly did. It was between Semenyo and Bruno, and I was back and forward and back and forward. And I quite liked the idea of still having the captain to play on Monday night. And Everton at home in recent weeks have really struggled, despite having a fantastic start to the season at the Hill Dickinson Stadium. Recently, their home form has been their problem. And so I was thinking, well, this is a really good opportunity. And in the end, glad I didn't, because no DEFCON for Bruno in this one. In fact, picks up the yellow card and only gets the 2 points. So that's frustrating. And Bomo's owners, though, it's 5 attacking returns and 6 for him now. So he feels like the right Manchester United midfielder to have. But Bruno's Bruno, and next week it could be very different.
I think so as well, yes. So I own both Mbeumo and Bruno, and happy with Mbeumo's points. Although I have to say that it wasn't his best game.
No.
You know, he did end up getting obviously that attacking return, but and he had a big chance. So when you're paying striker for an attacking team, of course you will get those opportunities. But I did think that Cunha had a very good game. I thought Bruno himself, like he always does, had a good consistent game. Ahmad had a very poor one. So actually in the next game, I'm expecting Sesko to start, Mbeumo to be on the right and Cunha to be on the left. We will see. But in terms of Bruno, look, last couple of game weeks, I feel Cunha has stolen his thunder a little bit in terms of taking shots because Bruno has completely dried up in terms of shot taking. His XG 2 game weeks ago was 0. Last night was 0.03, which essentially means he's had 1 pop shot in the last 2 games.
It got better. Let's take the positives. It grew. It's
on a right trajectory, which means he'll have 2 pop shots in the next one. No, I think with Bruno, I think you can say goodbye to defensive contribution points. In this new role under Carrick, he's not getting many. And I think he ended up with one or two out of 12 that he needs. So, you know, the whole thing of Bruno's route to points, well, that route is a little bit closed at the moment. But he has more routes in attack. If it's a game against Crystal Palace, which we're talking about next week, which you guys will discuss in the main pod, but I'm thinking Crystal Palace have their own problems going on at the moment. So they will enjoy playing them. I do think Man United don't do as well against teams that give them the ball. And again, Crystal Palace will do the same. Everton did the same. When Man United have the ball over 50% of possession, they don't really know what to do with it. So they'll work on it. They will have another free midweek. They will work on it. And Palace will have a game midweek. So is Bruno captaincy shout home to Palace? Absolutely. He's my current bus team captain.
But over Mbeumo? Because you've got both.
Yes, because I just feel Bruno has the route to points. He will still take those set pieces. He will still take that penalty if they win one. And ultimately, he can still get that goal. It was Mbeumo who got one or an assist this game. But there's no reason to say Bruno won't do it in the next game.
Sesko is the interesting one here for me because obviously as a Bruno owner, very happy to hold him. And Manchester United are a team that I think are really helpful to us in FPL because the fixtures are nice-ish. There's some difficult games in there, but most of the fixtures are quite nice for Manchester United over the next few weeks, starting with Crystal Palace this time. And then, like you say, Newcastle have been busy.
Yeah.
Playing lots of matches in the midweek next week. Villa's defence haven't been solid. Bournemouth's defence haven't been solid. And then it's Leeds and then Chelsea's defence who haven't been solid. So I think, you know, on paper, you'd look at those fixtures and go, okay, well, maybe they're a little bit mixed. But the reality of those fixtures is I think there's goals in there for Manchester United. So I'm very happy as a Bruno Fernandes owner to just hold him. And I'll probably hold him right the way through to the end of the season, barring an injury. But I am looking at Manchester United as the team in the league that are in good form, that don't have any other commitments outside of these last Premier League matches, and thinking this is a team that I would like to double up on. Now, defensively, maybe I could go there. And I think if Dorgu was fit, the world and its wife would have invested in Dorgu over the last few weeks. But Sesko is really intriguing to me because he's one. If Manchester United had a guaranteed starting forward every single week, you just buy them because the fixtures are there. The problem is we haven't had that, but he's coming off the bench and getting points on a regular basis now. And there was definitely in his celebration last night, I want you to start me. There was definitely a kind of a Carrick moment of like, I'm here and you could start me up top. I'm not going to do it anytime soon because I think you have to wait until we see a consistent amount of starts from him. But if we start seeing consistent starts from Sesko and then the continuation of these returns that he's been picking up when coming off the bench, he will be very popular to FPL managers. It's too risky to go there now. But in the coming weeks, I think he could be one that we look at if he's starting.
Maybe one to monitor. Ahmad did have a poor game, I felt. And when, you know, Ahmad's great in transition. So when you play the tougher teams, I think Ahmad's great. But I think when you play a team that sits back, I do think we will start to see this team where Sesko starts. But again, like I said, Man United have two games in four or five days again because of the midweek game week. I don't see Sesko starting both.
Just a quick word on Palace then, because they're Manchester United's opponents at the weekend. They played out a 1-0 draw against Wolves. Maybe that defence was a little bit lucky. Munoz owners consider themselves fortunate that Dean Henderson saves that penalty, because if it's not for him, then they obviously concede and the Munoz clean sheet goes again. Lacroix is due back for midweek, according to Glasner. That would obviously help that back line, but I still don't think that this is a defence that I want to be investing in, particularly ahead of a game against Manchester United.
Agreed. I don't get good vibes from the team, from the manager, and I think it's not a team that you want to invest in. Do you need to absolutely fire sell? No, not really. Their fixtures are okay, especially they have a Leeds at home fixture coming up. But I think if you're looking to invest or play, I think consider benching, especially this week.
Do you know a player that I'm considering benching or at least losing my temper with? And that is Morgan Rodgers, because Aston Villa play out a 1-1 draw with Leeds in this one. What a goal by Anton Stach, by the way. Just a little shout out to him. But Rodgers is so frustrating. I've owned him for weeks and weeks and the fixtures remain lovely. And so because of that, you kind of look at him and you go, can't really sell you because the fixtures are really, really nice. But that's one goal in 10 matches now for Morgan Rogers. And of the 28 shots that he's had in this period, only one of them has been defined as a big chance. So he's not exactly in great form. Have you got Rogers? What are you doing? Are you as frustrated as I am?
I don't have Rogers. And every week I go into it, you know, watching Villa's attack, I'm never... You know, when it's Chelsea and João Pedro or Palmer, I'm at the edge of my seat because I'm nervous. When it's Rogers, and this is the test, you know, like the FOMO test. I'm never afraid of Rogers not owning him. Of course, he gets goals, he's taking shots, but it's never huge chances. Like you said, just one in the last 10 games. But look, he's still a good option and he's still talismanic. But it's just that Villa don't score that many goals. They don't create as much XG. So I think it's okay to have him. He does have a great fixture in game week 31. If you were one of those planners and looking at the blank game week, you might want to hold him. He does have a Wolves game this week as well on a Friday. So I think he's okay to hold, but I get the frustration completely.
He'll probably start my Friday night off badly because it's one of those where I look at him every week and I think, right, there should be an attack in return for you. And then it gets to the end of every game week and he's got 2 points. And I think, what is the point of this every week, 2 points? Because 9 times out of 10, somebody on my bench that I've benched to play Morgan Rogers has got more than 2 points. This week it was Senesi. It's frustrating, right. But it's Wolves up next in a derby game on Friday evening. So I'm definitely going to give him this one. But I am getting to the point where if I don't start to see the underlying numbers looking better, because it's not just shots, it's big chances and it's big chances created that I'm interested in. And if I don't see those improving, there's a lot of midfielders that I'd like even more. Some of them come from a team that I was very shocked to see lose this week in Brentford, because despite, you know, how well they've been playing, Brighton have been quite the opposite in recent weeks. But this game was a complete role reversal. Now, having spoken to some Brentford fans, they all tell me it's because Michael Coyote missed the game. He's so important. He missed out, not just in terms of the long throws, but in terms of the way that they progress the ball. And actually, when I had a look at him, his final third touches are the most of in that Brentford side. So he is very, very important to the way that they move forward. We have to kind of hope that he's okay, I guess, then, as Thiago or Dango or anybody else from Brentford's owners. Apparently, it was a problem with his back as well. Back seemed to have been the problem this week. But yeah, as a new Thiago owner, I was very, very disappointed. His only goal in the last 6 weeks now is that penalty goal against Newcastle. But in this one, he does have one that just goes over the bar. He has a headed opportunity. Maybe he's a little bit unlucky.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think... like you mentioned, their performance against Arsenal got a lot of us noticing.
Excited.
And then they go out and put this performance. I think let's call it a blip for now. Their fixtures are incredible. They play Burnley, Bournemouth, Wolves and Leeds in the next four, which is really, really good. So I am hoping the open play threat from Thiago comes back. I can also confess to making an early transfer for Enzo to Dango, who I also wanted in that team as the double up. So let's hope that things improve and Coyote is back in business.
Yeah, both Dango and Sharda, both interesting picks, I think, in the midfield. Sharda obviously doesn't start this one. And I was between the two of them as an Enzo replacement potentially as well, thinking, well, I would like one of them, but I'm not really sure who. When Sharda was benched, I thought, well, there you go. That's decision made. I'll just get Dango. Actually, Sharda comes on at halftime for Keane Lewis-Potter. And I did think made a difference. Like it looked better with Sharda there. So I still think Dango is the better pick, but Sharda's definitely always there in the back of my mind as an option that you could go to. Let's finish up then on Sunderland versus Fulham, because as a Roofs owner, I was banking on this clean sheet. This was it's a home clean sheet against a Fulham side that haven't been setting the world on fire in terms of goals scored over recent weeks. So I thought, right, here we go. Here's at least 6 points for my goalkeeper. No, that didn't happen in the end. Maybe because Michele was forced off in the 11th minute with a calf injury. That is worrying me as a Roofs owner moving forwards.
Yeah, I mean, just like you mentioned with Coyote, I think Mukiele is so important to them, both defensively and from an attacking standpoint. So I think that was not ideal. I also played Alderete and it was not great. And after weeks of getting outscored by Mukiele, I was like, okay, if he's gone off, Alderete should outscore him. He also gets a one-pointer. But I think that the main talking point in this one was Harry Wilson getting defensive contribution points pretty much by halftime, yeah, which was incredible for him. Got an assist as well. So that was nice and a bonus. So I think that that's good. He's going to be popular as well as one of the midfield picks that we've talked about in relation to the Bournemouth ones, to the Brentford ones. So I think that's, those are the real things to talk about. I'm not sure many people are going for Sunderland picks at the moment anyway.
No, I don't think so. Little shout out to Raul Jimenez just before we end. That is his 100% Premier League penalty record maintained. 13 goals from 13 penalties. Very impressive. Fulham have Spurs up next, and that defence has been very vulnerable. I watch it a lot. It's not very good. And so that Fulham attack could easily do well in this one. I don't necessarily think we'll see defensive contribution points from Harry Wilson against Spurs, though, but maybe we see some attacking returns. So yeah, Fulham indeed, putting themselves on the radar because their fixtures are really nice moving forward. So if you've sold Harry Wilson in recent weeks, he could be a really nice option to reinvest in that midfield.
So we do remember that we don't have all the big teams playing Champions League and other European competitions this week, but Newcastle, Forest and Palace are in action. And by the end of this week, we'll also have the draws for these European competitions. So we'll know who's traveling, where and when, and how that impacts our FPL decision making. So it might be time for some patience with those transfers.
And if you can be patient, Jules, Kelly and I will be back on Thursday. We'll be focusing in on fixture swings that are happening right now and the teams that are benefiting from them and those that aren't, as well as discussing the best chip strategy to target for the run-in.
Interesting chip strategy. And if you haven't done already, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is XY6XPL. Sam, it's been great chatting with you. Good luck for this week.
Oh, Praz, fingers crossed for some green arrows and 3 points for both of our teams.
Indeed.
Good luck, everyone.